Thank you for joining At the Root of It on the Heritage Radio Network. This is Aaron Fitzpatrick, and we're broadcasting today, the 19th of January, out of Roberta's Restaurant in Brooklyn. And a thank you to our generous sponsor, Whole Foods Market, and to our engineer, Nat Wiener, and producer, Jack Inslee, today. And before going into the weekend wine, for our listeners, we have support for seedsforhaiti.org, an initiative creating seed banks for Haitian farmers. So support to that organization to relieve the devastation would be great. Seedsforhaiti.org. And for the week in wine, in breaking and unfortunate news, Sarah Palin has been chosen to speak at this year's Wine and Spirits Wholesalers of America convention in Las Vegas, despite having no affiliation with the drinks industry. The WSWA president and CEO claims that Governor Palin's support of America's free enterprise system positions her for this role. Quote, she understands that industries like the beverage alcohol industry play a key role in driving our national economy, end quote. That will be one address to tune out of. I reported a few months ago that a government-mandated bridge to be built in Mosel, Germany, was going to be threatening many acres of vineyards. Now in Bordeaux, a high-speed TGV rail link planned between Bordeaux, Toulouse, and Spain is in the works, which would cut right through the vineyards of Graves, threatening up to 50 acres of vines and up to 10 chateaux. Winemakers continue to protest, as the French do so well, the plans, contesting that viticultural heritage is being ignored in favor of infrastructure developments. And in the market feed, winebusiness.com reports that the number of U.S. wineries continues to grow and has reached 6,223, an uptick of 122 over last year. This total is composed of 5,304 bonded wineries, licensed by the Alcohol, Tobacco, Tax, and Trade Bureau, and responsible for all production activities that take place on premises, and 919 virtual wineries, which is a winery that has a physical location and will produce its wine using the services of a bonded outside facility to produce and bottle its wine. California is home to 49% of the total wineries, with 3,047 wineries, and New York comes in fourth with 229 wineries. We're going to take a short break before we come back this afternoon with my guest, Rick Beard, from the famed Grosinger's Wine Merchants out in Napa, California, in Yountville. Be right back. That was a little Santa Gold remix. Welcome back to At the Root of It with Aaron Fitzpatrick on the Heritage Radio Network. And remember, all of our episodes can be viewed online at heritageradionetwork.com and also on iTunes via podcast. And my guest this afternoon, calling in from Grosinger's Wine Merchants in Yountville, is Rick Beard. Rick, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hello.
Hi. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So for our listeners who don't know, the famed Grossinger's retail store, this is something I discovered on my recent trip out to California. And kind of, you have a little bit of a fame out there, I'd say. At least locally.
Yeah. No, we have a good buzz about us.
Yeah.
Or a bad buzz about us, I should say.
Well, what are some of the things people say about your store? How does it distinguish itself from others?
We're a little more off the wall than most of the wine shops out here. It kind of looks more like a record shop or a head shop or something. We have a lot of rock and roll art up, and it's kind of dark and a little more fun in here than some of the other places. And we do freestyle tastings that we call drinkings instead of tastings.
Okay.
Because an ounce of wine isn't as much fun as a whole bottle. And we just don't take ourselves too seriously around here, and our customers really seem to enjoy it.
Sounds like some of the customers come in for a bottle or a taste, and they end up staying for hours.
Mm-hmm. It's been called the black hole before. You come in and you can't leave.
And what kind of wines do you specialize in?
Small production, mostly all California wines, although we do sell some imports, but mostly small production wines from around the area that don't get much distribution around the country that exhibit a really good quality to price ratio.
Okay.
So
some of these a lot of the vineyards I've seen in your repertoire I've not even heard of.
Yeah, many of that's kind of what we hope for, and kind of hope that our customers, that's why they like us.
Yeah.
Because we always come up with new things that people haven't heard of. There's so many little producers out here that are always popping up, and there's always new ones that have been around that I haven't heard of. It's amazing how many are out here. So we try and find things that, like I said, that exhibit a really good value and high quality, try and get them to our customers all over the country into markets where these wines aren't available.
Mm-hmm. So you ship all over the country?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. We used to, before everything softened up as far as the shipping laws and everything, we were kind of the bad guys out here, the bootleggers.
Sure.
Which was pretty fun for
someone
a long
had to
time.
Do it.
Uh-huh.
Now, have you always been on that main drag? It was Washington Street, right?
Yes. We started off in the old Grossinger Winery, which is in the middle of Yountville, and it's a big brick building that used to be a winery back in the late 1800s and early 1900s. It started there in 1970, and then it moved across the street in 1985. We're into the building where the Bouchon Bakery is right now, in the middle of Yountville. Mm-hmm. And then about 9 years ago or so, we moved down the street here. Just a couple blocks. So we have always been on the main drag in Yountville, but in a few different locations for over the 40 years.
So what's the relationship between the vineyard or the winery that was there back in the 70s or pre-Prohibition?
Well, the winery was kind of the biggest and one of the biggest and the best out here back in the day, and it operated through Prohibition until 1955. When it went out of business, and the winery laid dormant for all those years, and then in 1970 they redid it and turned it into a small mall with shops, restaurants, and this wine store, which in 1970, if you can imagine, was one of the first boutique wine stores in the country because there weren't boutique wineries. So it started. It took the name of the winery in the back of the building.
Uh huh. And that winery was originally from a German fellow. Is that correct?
He was a German Jew that came over here in the mid 1800s, and he had a great knowledge of yeasts and fermentation. And he formed a partnership with a guy named General George C. Yount, and they formed the town Yountville. And this winery was what the whole town was built around.
Oh wow! So that name is really embedded into.
A lot of history behind it that a lot of people don't know about. Mm-hmm. The name has, if the winery would still be operating today, it would be a name like Krug or Behringer or Schramsberg or one of those old German names.
Sure.
But because it hasn't been operating in modern years, not a lot of people really know it. But it was a very significant part of the wine business in Napa Valley. long time ago.
So now it's referred to as a ghost winery?
Yeah, I guess you could say that. It's but it has shops and
so there's no hope in bringing it back to life, really.
No, but I do have some rights to the name. So, you know, the as far as having the winery functioning like it used to, I think is not going to happen. But there's always a potential for a Grossinger label.
Sure. I was expecting that might come some point.
Mm-hmm.
And how was your affiliation? Are you family related, or are you just kind of stepped in?
I'm just carrying the torch.
Yeah.
I bought the business from my boss, which was about, 10 years ago or so, 11 years ago. And he had the business for about 15 years before me. And then there was another guy. There were several owners before him. But as far as the, I'm not a family member or a, a Grossinger by any means. Although I did meet one of the last surviving Grossingers before he passed away. And his name was Leland B. Grossinger, and he was some form of a California state politician.
Okay.
And he stunk like smoke and cigarettes so bad, it was like he was smoking, but he wasn't. He was a funny old guy.
Long live the Grossinger name.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I've seen a few of your videos, and I know you've have a certain propensity to feature some food pairing in some of your videos. I know you put them on your website. They're on YouTube. Is that something that you and Justin, your colleague there, play around with quite a bit?
Oh, yeah. We've done some filming things over the years that have been a lot of fun. And one of the things that we enjoy doing, Justin's quite a good cook, and I can do okay myself, but we like to cook up nasty stuff and try and pair wines with it. And you know, we've done a few where we pair wines with TV dinners, try and help people through the tough economy. And
sell them their $28 bottle of wine.
Uh-huh. Exactly. You know, why sacrifice your wine when you can still enjoy your dinner?
Sure.
But we did the I think our most well-known one is the pork brains and milk gravy.
Mm-hmm.
With the scrambled eggs, which is just horrible. But they're a lot of fun. I hope people don't take us too seriously.
Sure, sure. No, I could say. Tell me a little bit about some of the wines that you have. I know you have a newsletter, and each month or every... Is it bi-monthly newsletter?
Mm-hmm. Almost every month. So
okay.
Hypothetically monthly, but not always. So in this newsletter, we feature things from California, Oregon, Washington, and every now and again an import. Some of the wines, I'll just read down some of the brands that we sell, and I'm sure that you'll recognize some and maybe not others. Some of the more pricey ones this month that we were selling were O'Shaughnessy, Grace Family, Outpost Cab, the Dunn Cabs off of Howell Mountain. Then some of the more price-driven wines that we were doing this month, a brand called Sean Miner,
okay.
Which these things sell for about $17 a bottle, and they taste, you know, about like $35 or $40 wines. Again, you know, really good wine for the money. We also come up with some pretty screaming deals these days with, you know, the economy. Everybody's offering up some
Yeah,
discounts.
I noticed you had some vintages that were going back pretty deep of the same winery. Are some of the smaller guys out there unloading a bunch of stuff for you?
They are. They're trying to be. Everybody's trying to be creative to find a way to make their wine move.
Yeah.
Like you know, like it was before the economic dip. But you know, there's just some good deals, and a lot. In all reality, a lot of California wine and wine from around the world was kind of getting overpriced in some areas.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like real estate and yachts and luxury cars. It's all kind of an adjustment.
Sure.
But a great wine that we have this month that used to be a lot more expensive is called Spelletich Cellars, and they're a really small producer. They only make a few hundred cases of wine, of Cabernet a year. And you know, it's something that most people probably haven't heard of anywhere.
Sure, no.
But
I
we get, but that's the type of thing that we get through here all the time. Another great one off of Mount Veeder is called Paras Vineyards, P-A-R-A-S.
Okay.
And then we have a Merlot from them. Most of their wines are up in this. They're a lot more expensive, and for some reason, we have this Merlot that's $29 from them that tastes, you know, of the $50 and $60 qualities of quality of other Merlots.
So is Merlot back?
There's some very, very good ones.
Yeah.
So I think the extremely good ones, the upper 5%, never really went away.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where we try and hunt, are the ones that really are true to varietal character, true to flavor, and have a lot of intensity, and you know, ones that will hopefully age really well too.
What about that Bryceland Brut from Humboldt County?
I love their stuff.
What's that about?
Bryceland is a small winery up in Humboldt, which is north of Mendocino. For those who don't know where it is, in between Mendocino and Oregon, and the wines up there have a little more acidity to them because of the climate, and they take on a different terroir that we don't see anywhere else in California. So they're very unique in their flavor profile, and They make Pinot Noir because of the maritime
influences and because of the elevation?
Yeah, well, I think because of the soil that they're growing it in, there's very, very, very few vineyards in Humboldt County. I don't think that a lot of people have been exposed to those flavors.
Okay.
It's almost a mix between California and Oregon. If you could put like Russian River and Sonoma Pinots and take an Oregon Pinot and mix them together, you would almost come up with a similar texture and intensity of those of the Bryceland wines. And what you were referring to is their sparkling wine, which I think is awesome, and I think that they make some of the best sparkling wine in California, and it's about $30 a bottle, which is right in the middle as far as California sparkling wine prices go, and I think the quality is really, really up there. We did a video up there and filmed some stuff
with them
that was a lot of fun also. They're really, really cool. They're old hippies that moved up there in the 70s and, you know, probably started off doing something else and wound up making some of the best wine in California. And that's one that it's you won't find anywhere. It's almost impossible to get, even for me. I have to drive up there.
So how many bottles do you get?
Oh, I can almost get as much as I want. It's just a matter of loading up the pickup truck and driving 4 hours each way, because they don't really distribute much.
Oh, is that how far it is? Four hours?
Yeah,
wow.
It's about 4 hours north of here.
Right.
Up in the thick of the Redwoods. But they are awesome people. That's one of the great things about this business, is getting to meet some really cool people along the way.
Absolutely.
And they are definitely up there on the list.
Well, stay on the line. We're gonna take a short break. I read today about the California-wide sustainability certification program being launched, so I want to talk to you a little bit about that as well.
Okay.
Listening to the Heritage Radio Network, and this is At the Root of It. And my guest this afternoon is Rick Beard, calling in from Yountville, from Grosinger's Wine Merchants on Washington Street. Rick, you still there?
Yes,
good,
I am.
Good, good. Is it snowing out there?
No. Well, it is up in the mountains.
Okay. It's raining.
But we're getting a ton of rain right now. It's dumping. We're actually expecting up to a foot of rain over the next 8 days or so.
So pretty unusual, no, for this time? Yeah,
we've been in a drought over the last several years, so it's a little unusual, but definitely it's actually kind of normal, but it just hasn't been happening for the last few years. So we're catching up on our water in Tahoe. Up north, or up out east, is getting a ton of snow. They're going to get up to 10 feet this week for the skiers.
Nice. That's one thing we don't get here on the East Coast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not like Utah snow or Colorado snow. It's a little damper.
Okay.
But there's a lot of it.
Yeah. So I was reading earlier today about the certification program, CCSW, the California Sustainable Wine Growers Program.
Uh-huh.
You heard much about this?
I have not heard a whole lot about it.
No.
Well,
it's interesting. It's kind of an independent certification that wine producers have launched on their own to self-assess their sustainability.
Yes.
And I guess modeling after agriculture sectors like citrus and avocado, you know, being able to try to make as true to a product as you can using sustainable methods, but instead of it being an actual, you know, certification based on a certain set of rules, it's more a self-assessment that other people who are doing the same thing, you know, evaluate.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think probably the reason for this is that there are so many wineries out here that are using, you know, organic methods and sustainable farming that don't make organic wines.
Yeah.
Because of the sulfur, which is fine, and we don't want them to, because those wines don't live. So, and I think that the whole organic wine thing a few years ago just fell on its face.
Mm-hmm.
So there.
You mean worldwide or mostly in California?
I'd say from what I've seen, almost worldwide, anybody that, you know, labels their wine organic, that means that they can't use sulfur in it. So anybody that really knows anything about wine knows that that wine isn't going to live for more than a couple years, probably. And it, you know, it got a bad rap.
Yeah.
So these wineries need a way to let people know that they are using these farming methods without it saying organic on the label,
mm-hmm.
and without having to wait around for years and years and years for some government agency to say that it's okay to put something on your label,
right,
when you're actually implementing these methods from the get-go.
Yeah. Well, it is one of those questions that, you know, even in Europe, so many people tell me, oh, whenever I drink in Europe, I don't get the headaches that I do when I drink wine in the States. Is it because of the sulfur? And I know that in Europe, for instance, a lot of people are using a lot of organic or natural winemaking methods, even if it's not stated on the label.
Uh-huh.
Maybe less sulfur, perhaps, than some
I wouldn't necessarily say that.
Yeah.
Because it's a very necessary ingredient in wine that's going to live for, you know, a period of time. And I'd say that, I mean, I'm sure that there's a lot of French wine that is drank, you know, immediately.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of Village wines and stuff where, you know, you take them out of the vat and have your jug filled that may not have as much, but I think it's very subjective to people.
And yeah, and the context that you're traveling.
Yeah, you're having a good time. You're not going to pay attention to your headache.
Right, right.
You know? And
it's just when you have to wake up for work the next day.
You know, yeah, and at the same time, there are a lot of wines that are, you know, there's a lot of wines that are made in France. There's a lot of wines that are made here in California that are made with, you know, unfortunately are made with preservatives and with, you know, additives and everything. But those are pretty crappy wines that usually are on, you know, grocery store shelves and boxes and all of that. So hopefully that's not what we're drinking.
Sure. Well, it was interesting, too, because it sounds like some of the big players, or at least, you know, the 12 wineries that are stated as having been on board with this program, the certification program, are quite big wineries like Fetzer, Gallo, Constellation.
Mm-hmm. You know, Fetzer, I think, they've kind of led the whole thing.
Yeah.
They kind of started the organic wine movement back, I guess maybe 15 years ago or more.
Mm-hmm.
They, you know, with the Bonterra label and some of their their stuff, but they've really pushed it, and I think that places like Gallo, I think, are, I mean, I don't mean to bash Gallo too much, but I think that they need to join these things so that they can wipe away some of the negative image.
Sure, yeah.
Of them, you know, because they're not entirely, I don't think they're, that every vineyard that Gallo is using is going to fall under this, but
probably not.
You know, they're going to have some wines that they feature that are, you know, to make themselves look a little better and a little more crunchy.
Yeah, well, they noticed that the consumers are more and more interested in things that, you know, food and wine related.
I think, and that's another thing. I think that 10 years ago, when the or 50, hell, God, maybe even 20 years ago, when the first the organic wine push came, I don't think that anybody was really the whole organic food movement hadn't hit. Or the fad, where it became really nationally accepted and embraced. So maybe that's part of the reason why the organic wine thing kind of flopped.
Do you find that in California, because you have such a bounty of, you know, agriculture and you know, fresh produce at your doorstep, do you find that it's more of a natural just way of eating as opposed to maybe our other parts of the country, which are more consumed with just the idea of eating organically?
Yes, and I would have to say, for the most part. I'm originally from Nebraska, so I do go back to Omaha and check out the food and the restaurants and the grocery stores, and it is a lot different. And that's, you know, that's a decent metropolis there, and when you get outside of a city community around the country, your food selections are very, very limited compared to what's out here.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. I forget sometimes how spoiled we are with the produce and the availability of seafood and ingredients out here.
Mm-hmm.
So it definitely becomes
less of a preoccupation and more just kind of a natural way of, well, it's a lifestyle. More
yep,
less, yeah,
definitely. And everybody out here, you know, in Napa Valley, everybody's into the, you know, the clean foods and, you know, organic foods and cooking with them. And, you know, we're starting to swing to where we see more organic meats and, you know, locally raised meats and,
that's good.
You know, stuff that's actually good for you.
Any other trends you're noticing, whether it be in the food or the wine industry out there? In terms of even people's buying, purchasing?
Well, definitely. Over the last year and a half, the people have just become so price sensitive.
Yeah.
Partially, you know, just because of the economy. There's less money to go around right now. These are luxury items, and people still want to drink. Maybe, you know, a lot of my customers, even the wealthiest, you know, they're still rich, but they're making less money. So everybody's a little just, aware of it a little more.
Yeah.
I think that people that are offering really good deals, really good wine for the price, they're going to go, they're going to live through this downturn, where there's a lot of wineries, I think, that are overpriced right now. They're going to have a hard time selling their wines. So,
what about the argument that because people aren't maybe eating out as much or going out as much, they might be more apt to spoil themselves with a good bottle of wine if they stay home?
If they are, they're, I haven't seen it coming off of my shelves.
Okay.
The buying, you know, I do, that's how I cook and how I usually eat most of my dinners are at home. And
when you're not eating TV dinners, frozen TV dinners?
Yeah, when I'm not eating TV dinners with pork brains. We cook and drink at home. So I think everybody's doing that, but everybody's just price conscious. It's not like I'm selling a lot more wine because people are staying home more. I think that is definitely a trend, you know.
What about some of the varietals that are coming out of California, like Charbono and some of these 100% varietals I've had recently? I thought it'd been interesting to have. Yeah.
That's been a lot of fun for a few years now. They've been, there's some nice old vine Charbono. Mm-hmm. It's kind of,
I had the Robert Foley Charbono not too long ago.
Yeah, Vince Tofanelli, they also make a really nice one. And August Briggs Winery, they make one of the best ones out here in Napa. So those are really cool. It's kind of a that's kind of a nice little history lesson. That used to be a pretty popular varietal back in the day.
Did it?
And a Tempranillo. There's a little bit of Tempranillo coming out of California that's actually pretty darn good for the first time.
Blended or 100% varietal?
100%.
Okay.
A friend of mine named John Grant, he's the assistant winemaker up at Turley Wine Cellars, and he has a label, his own label, called Straight Line. And it is probably the best California Tempranillo I've had. It's about $25 and very good wine for the money.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, it's refreshing to see some new varietals and new blends come on when everybody's just been going cab, and ripping out old Petit Sirah and ripping out old vines to put in new Cabernet to try and get more money for it.
That's making a little comeback, too, the Petit Sirah, no?
Oh, a little bit, yeah. That is truly a fighting varietal, and I can never figure out. It's one of the, my great mysteries is why it's not more popular, why more people don't like it as much as Cab, because I think it has every bit as much to offer. Mm-hmm. And I've had some Cabs, some old Cabs. There's been some winemakers in the past that have blended a little bit of Petit Sirah with Cabernet and had great success with it. And I always thought that that would kind of be more of a trend than sticking to Bordeaux, blending Bordeaux, only Bordeaux varietals.
Yeah.
I thought it would be kind of a California style or maybe a little claim to California instead of just sticking to the French varietals.
You brought up France. I mean, just before we close this afternoon, I wanted to ask about also consumers in California who might be putting in bids for, you know, in the France we call it, you know, futures or en premier, but bids for some of the wines direct from the wineries out there. Is that kind of quieted down a bit?
Oh, like futures from California wineries?
Yeah, or at least allotments direct from the vineyards itself.
You can have as much as you want nowadays.
Yeah.
You know, except for the super, super elite, super few that, you know, like the Screaming Eagle and Harlan's maybe. But I know that even Harlan, they're opening up their mailing list to new people.
Yeah.
That they're sending out first-time offerings now because people are dropping off the lists. So I think that this, the whole thing of, oh, we have your allocation and you must take it by this date. It's, you know, they still have the wine later. So
yeah.
things are flowing a lot slower. And, you know, right now, one of the big reps out here from Southern Wine and Spirits, he said, hey, you know, if you need some Opus 1 or some Joseph Phelps Insignia or some Quintessa or some whatever, you know, we've got it.
Yeah, that wouldn't have happened four years ago.
Yeah. It sure wouldn't have happened. So everybody's being a little nicer.
Right.
a little sweeter.
Oh, that's good. That's good for humanity. Good for a change.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, I know our Heritage listeners would love your store, so I definitely wanted to get you on. And
well, thank you so much.
Yeah, what's your website?
Our website is www.grozingers.com, and that's GROEZINGERS, Grozingers with an S on the end, .com, and you can Google that, and we pop up. You should be able to find us pretty easy.
Easy.
In Yountville.
Yep, and they could just sign up from your newsletter
you
from there.
You can sign up for our newsletter online, which is obnoxious, and I apologize in advance.
I know, I was expecting a little bit more crudeness out of you today.
Yeah, I'm being kind of nice. I'm being a little sweet, huh? But, yeah, this newsletter, we call it the bleeding middle finger of Napa Valley. So, yeah, we have a lot of fun with it, and I know that our customers, they really enjoy it a whole bunch.
Yeah.
So it's good for airplanes.
Breaks up the day a little bit and offers some laughter, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Yeah. Good for airplanes and toilets.
Excellent. Well, on that note, I'm going to say goodbye, and we'll talk to you very soon.
Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Definitely.
I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay. Take care.
You too. Cheers.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye. And again, you can listen to this episode on heritageradionetwork.com or via iTunes and podcast. Signing off today, this is Aaron Fitzpatrick on At the Root of It. And again, a sponsor, thank you to Whole Foods Market and our producer and engineer, Jack Inslee and Nat Wiener. Have a good one.